The book of Acts is often referred to as the Acts of the Apostles. Actually, there is no act of every apostle, and there is not all the acts of any of the apostles. But really, you have some of the acts of some of the apostles. And if you haven't studied this lately with this in mind, do you realize that there are only four apostles mentioned in all the book of Acts? And of these four, there are only two that we have any spoken word from. For example, in Acts chapter 12 and verse 12, it says that Herod slew James, the brother of John, with the sword. Now, this is the mention of James, but nowhere in the book of Acts do we have a word that James spoke. And maybe even more astounding is the fact that we have the name of John. For example, Acts 3, Peter and John went up to the temple the third hour, the hour of prayer being the ninth hour of the day, and saw this cripple there. Now, all of the speech that follows, you have only Peter, not a word from John. And so you have only two apostles giving recorded messages in the book of Acts. Those apostles are Peter and Paul. Now, in the first 12 chapters, you have Peter as the leading character. And then from 13 to 28, you have Paul as the leading character. Now, Luke has been regarded from the very beginning as being the author of the book of Acts. But you know, we don't know a lot about Luke. For example, we have three passages that especially refer to Luke. One of those in Colossians 4:14. Where Paul says, "Luke, the beloved apostle, Luke, the beloved physician, and Demas salute you." The second one in Philemon, verses 24 or 23 and 24, Paul lists five of his fellow faithful servants, and one of the five is Luke. So the beloved apostle was a faithful servant along with the apostle Paul. And then that remarkable passage in 2 Timothy chapter 4, beginning in verse 9, I believe, Paul says, "Make haste to come unto me quickly, for all have forsaken me." We have Demas that has forsaken me, having loved this present world. And one has gone to Dalmatian, one has gone to Mesopotamia, and said, "Only Luke is with me." So here was a man that was a faithful servant of Christ, great companion of Paul, that was with Paul to the very end of his life. Now, you know, when Paul went to Damascus, or on his way to Damascus, to find Christians that were in the synagogue and bring them back bound to Jerusalem for trial, we know the story of how that when he was almost to the city, suddenly there shone about him a great light, and brighter than the sun at the noonday, and Paul fell to the earth. He heard a voice saying, "Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me?" And dumbfounded, Saul said, "Who are you, Lord?" And he said, "I'm Jesus of Nazareth, whom you persecute." And I doubt that you could ever find one more surprised than Saul was at that time. But his immediate response was, "Oh, what must I do, Lord?" And the Lord said, "Go into the city, and there it will be told you what you must do." Well, he went into the city, went into the house of Judas on Straight Street. And there for 3 days and nights, he eats nothing, he's praying. But he sees in a vision a man by the name of Ananias coming to restore his sight and tell him what he must do. In the meantime, the Lord appears to Ananias and says, now, you go over to Straight Judas' house, and there is Saul, and he's praying, and he's seen a vision of your coming. And Ananias had already heard about Saul's coming and his intended purpose. And he said, Lord, I've heard many things about this man. And the Lord said, you go, and I'm going to show him how many things he must suffer for my name's sake. And the amount of suffering that Paul went through is tremendous. You know, his two main enemies in all of this were both Jews, but two different kinds. You have the unconverted Jew that resented the fact that their champion, who once was the one who fought against Christ and the Christians, was now proclaiming him. They hated him for that. But there was another group. And this group was made up of Christians, Jewish Christians, who believed that the Gentiles had to be proselyted to the Jews' religion, or as Jews, before they could obey the gospel and become Christians. And in fact, we refer to those as Judaizing teachers. Well, at Corinth, there were a lot of those Judaizing teachers, and they were trying to destroy Paul's influence, or at least weaken it. And they were saying, now, he's not a real apostle, or at best only a second-rate one, because all of us were with Christ from the baptism of John until he ascended. Paul was not in that group. Well, Paul in 1 Corinthians 15 says of himself, I am as one born out of due season, that I was not an apostle when they were being made, but he had seen the Lord, and he had the power of the apostle, and he was behind in none of them. And this friction there caused Paul to have to relate the things that he went through. And he did this with great reluctance, because it was almost like he was boasting. But in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, beginning in verse 23, he says, are they servants of the Lord? He says, I am more, in labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews, five times I received 40 stripes, minus one. Three times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. Three times I've been shipwrecked. A day and a night I've been in the deep, in journeys often, in perils of water, in perils of robbers, in perils of my own countrymen, in perils of the Gentiles, in perils of the city, in perils of the wilderness, in perils on the sea, in perils with false brethren, in weariness and toil, in sleeplessness often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness, besides the other things which comes upon me daily, my deep concern for all of the churches. Now, as we say the life of Paul, we realize that much of this suffering was also undergone by the author of the book of Acts. Not all of it, but I want to trace with you some of these things that we may see what Luke saw and what Paul suffered. In chapter 9, you have the conversion of Paul. And for 2 years, he's away in Arabia. Some think that he may have been at Mount Sinai, where the law was given, and where later the convent of St. Catherine was built, and where a great Bible scholar and a searcher of manuscript, Tischendorf, was there and located a manuscript that we know as the one of the three great ones that we have, and it's now in the Museum of London, there in the London Museum. But anyway, Paul came back then to Damascus, preached, had to be let over the wall of the city in the basket, and then went to Jerusalem. Well, there, the brethren were afraid of him. And Barnabas actually took him under his wing and said, look, this man has seen the Lord. This man has changed. This man is one of us. And so they took him in, and he began to preach in Jerusalem. Well, it wasn't long before the Lord said, Paul, I'm sending you away from here. They won't listen to you. And he said, but Lord, they know how I persecute. Well, they won't listen to him. So Paul went away to Tarsus. And in the meantime, there was a great church of Gentiles established in the city of Antioch. Now, this is Antioch of Syria. You know, there were two different Antiochs. We'll get to one, the one in Pisidia, in just a minute. But the one in Syria, about 400 miles north of Jerusalem, and where there came a great Gentile church there. In fact, some scholars have estimated by the end of the first century, there were as many as 100,000 Gentile Christians there in Antioch. But the brethren in Jerusalem wanted to see about the soundness of those brethren there, so they sent Barnabas up, and Barnabas checked it out and encouraged them to continue the way they were, and he saw a great opportunity there. He saw something that was beyond what he could do, and so he went to Tarsus, got Saul of Paul, still Saul, but brought him back there to Antioch, and they held a year's revival. And then in chapter 13, the Spirit said, I want you to separate Barnabas and Saul for the work I've appointed to them. And this began the first missionary journey of Paul. You know, Paul made three journeys. And on the first, he was telling the brethren, these Gentile brethren, that there's come a hard time for the Jewish brethren in Jerusalem and Judea, and you ought to help them. And Paul saw this as a means of bringing these two elements of the church together. He said, they have given you spiritual blessings. Now you ought to give them material blessings. And so all during his first missionary journey, he was telling them this. Well, on the second missionary journey, he was collecting the money. And then the third missionary journey went to Jerusalem. This time he was taking the money to Jerusalem for those poor saints and wanted to be there before Pentecost because they'd be there from all over the world. But anyway, God said, I want to send you on a journey. And so they went down to Seleucia, the seacoast town, and then set sail, went over to the island of Cyprus. Now, Barnabas was acquainted with Cyprus. He may have been a native of Cyprus. We don't know that. But when gifts were being made in the church in Jerusalem, he had a field in Cyprus that he sold, gave all of it for the relief of the saints there. But they went to the island of Cyprus, and they stopped first at Salamis and then went across the island to Paphos, which was the capital city of Cyrus, and there they met a man by the name of Sergius Paulus, who was the proconsul, the equivalent of the governor of Cyprus that the Romans had set up, and he was interested in hearing, but here was a soothsayer, Bar-Jesus, or Elymas, that kept refuting the things that Paul said. And he finally said, oh, you son of the devil, you root of all iniquity, when will you cease to pervert the right ways of the Lord? Then he said, you're going to be blind for a season, and another will have to lead you around. And this happened immediately. And when Sergius Paulus saw that, he was convinced that these men were telling the truth, and as they told about Jesus of Nazareth, he came to believe and was converted. Well, now they had with them a young man, the son of a wealthy Jewish lady in Jerusalem by the name of Mary, and he was going along, cousin of Barnabas, and when they left Cyprus, they went over to Perga, and John left them. Now, why, I don't know. I believe Clark says he got homesick. Maybe so. Maybe he is dreading those Pisidian highlands that were so dangerous. And there are many could-bes, but we don't know. But anyway, we do know this. Paul looked upon him as a quitter. He did not have a legitimate right to go back in Paul's mind. And this later is to cause trouble between him and Barnabas. But anyway, they went up to Antioch of Pisidia. And this is where their first trouble began, because there they spoke on the Sabbath, and Paul told about Jesus that their forefathers had killed. God raised him up. And the second Sabbath they were there, they asked him to come back a second Sabbath. All the city about it gathered. And the Jews were so jealous that they refuted everything he said. And Paul finally said, look, it was necessary to preach to you first, you Jews. But now we turn to the Gentiles. And as they left, they shook the dust off to their feet. You know, this is what the Lord had told the 12 when he sent them out in the 70. He said, if the city won't receive you, shake the dust off of your feet. Well, they left there, went over to Iconium. And at Iconium, first, they had great results. The record says that they so spake that many believed. However, these angry Jews back over in Antioch came over, stirred up the Jews there in Iconium. And when Paul and Barnabas learned that they were about to stone them, well, then they left and went down to Lystra, which is in the province of Lycaonia. There's a thing that I meant to mention also. Back on the island of Cyprus, there at Paphos, two things of great importance happened. For one, Saul's name was changed to Paul, and from then on it's Paul. And also the order, instead of Barnabas and Saul, it became Paul and Barnabas. And so now Paul is taking the lead in all of that. Well, when they heard they were about to be stoned there, they left Iconium, went down to the province of Lycia, and went to the city of Lystra. There they found a cripple that was congenitally crippled, that is, from his mother's womb, had never walked. And Paul looked at him and saw that he had faith to be healed. And he said to him, stand up. And the man stood up and began to walk, and not limp around, but jumping like the man in Jerusalem went in the temple, jumping like a kangaroo. But this, when the priest of Zeus heard this, now they had decided that the gods had come down. They named Paul, they named Barnabas Zeus and Paul Hermes, because he's the speaker, and Hermes was the god of the spokesman, the orator, and so forth. Well, Paul, here they came with garlands and oxen to offer sacrifice to them. And Barnabas, with great difficulty, stopped them from that and said, look, we are men like you are. We have come to tell you about a God that is not worshipped with these things. And so he calmed them down, but I imagine they were pretty miffed over that, because here came Jews down from Iconium, stirred up the other Jews, and they actually took Paul, who they just called a god, and stoned him and thought they'd killed him. says they stoned him and dragged him out of the city and left him for dead. Every time I think of that being dragged out of the city, I think about a brother by the name of Bishop that came to the school back in either 43 or 44, and he was a conscientious objector. You know, many, many of the brethren were conscientious objectors. And put down your conscientious objector, and they looked in your record and found that your conduct indicated that you were such, why, then they would give you a 4D classification, or else later the Quakers built a lot of different camps for these conscientious objectors, and they were sent there. They had to pay their own room and board, and they worked them 8 hours a day. But Brother Bishop was one of those. And he said, "This is not right. We're just slaves here." And he said, "I'm leaving." And so they had a bulletin board, and he posted up, "Tomorrow afternoon, 3 o'clock, I'm leaving." And he did. Well, he went to New York. It took the FBI several months to find him. But he was walking along the street one day, and two FBI officers came up by him and said, "Come on, you're going with us." And he said, "I'm a free man." Said, "No, you belong to us." Said, "Well, if I belong to you, so I'm sitting down here." And he just sat down on the sidewalk. But he said those FBI men, one grabbed one leg, one grabbed the other, and they dragged him to the car. And he said, "You talk about getting hot. That is hot." But every time I think about dragging the corpse, they called of Paul, out of the city, they left him for dead. And you know, when the brethren gathered around him, he revived and went to the city of Derby. I've often wondered if that was some miraculous work there. You know, Paul had a thorn in the flesh that bothered him terribly that he asked the Lord 3 times to remove, but the Lord said, "My grace is sufficient for you." But how could a man that was left for dead get up and then the next day go over to Derby? But anyway, we're not told about that. But they went to Derby and there turned around. And here they retraced their steps. They went back then to Lystra and then to Iconium and then over to Antioch and back to down to Perga and then over to Paphos and Salamis and then to Antioch. But as they went, they were appointing elders in every church. And they were strengthening the brethren. So then they came back to Antioch. And problems were waiting for them there because certain of these Judaizing teachers came in and said, "Now, those Gentiles that you've converted have to be circumcised or their conversion is of no value." But Paul said, "No." He said, "We preached among them, and we preached the gospel that we preached to the Jews, and they believed and obeyed, and as a result, they were saved. And we said nothing about their having to be circumcised." Well, there arose such a contention there, the brethren said, "We're going to send Paul and Barnabas and others, and these Judaizers down to Jerusalem." And there was convened, this is in Acts 15, a council to decide whether or not the Gentiles that were converted had to become Jews by circumcision. You know, God gave to Abraham the sign of his people, which was circumcision, and these couldn't let go of that. Well, there's a lot of discussion. And finally, we have Peter speaking up. And Peter was well received by those Judaizing teachers. But Peter said, you know how that a good while ago, God chose me to go to the Gentiles, this house of Cornelius, and to preach unto them. And I said nothing about their being circumcised, and God gave them the Holy Spirit, just like he had given to us. And so there's nothing to this. Then Paul and Barnabas got up, and Paul told how that they had gone among the Gentiles. They had preached the gospel. They had obeyed the gospel. And they said nothing at all about their having to be circumcised. And then James. Now, I said there's only one apostle, James, but this is James, the Lord's brother. One of the elders there of the Jerusalem church, one that was highly regarded. In fact, they gave him the name of Old Camel Knees. Said that he was on his knees praying so much that his knees became like camel hooves. And so he was known as Camel Knees. He's the one that wrote the book of James. But anyway, James said, now, brethren, you've heard Paul, you've heard Paul and Silas, or Paul and Barnabas, and you've heard Peter. And these are very things that the prophets prophesied. And then he quoted several prophecies from the Old Testament. And then my thought is that we lay on him no other burden than that they keep themselves from fornication and things polluted by idols, and from from blood and things that have been sacrificed to idols. Well, the whole brethren then, all of them there, decided that's a thing. And so then they wrote a letter. And in addition to the letter, they sent two of their people. They sent Judas and Silas up with them to tell them the same thing. And of course, that brought great joy to the Gentiles. Now, Judas came back, but Silas remained there. In the meantime, Paul said to Barnabas, let's go back and check on the churches where we went the first time. See how they're doing. And Barnabas said, great. Let's take John Mark with us. Paul said, no way. Barnabas said, I'm not leaving him. Well, he's not going with me. And finally, the contention between them became so great that Barnabas took John Mark, and they went back the way that they had begun this first journey, back to the island of Cyprus. Well, Paul then chose Silas, and the two of them started toward the very end of their first journey. And they went through Syria and Cilicia, and then came to Derbe, and there preached and went on then to Lystra. And they had a great surprise at Lystra, because there a young man whose father was a Greek, whose mother was a Jew, had obeyed the gospel. And he had great recommendations from all in the area. And Paul wanted to take Timothy with him. Well, being the son of a Greek, and of course they regarded your paternity by your father, he knew that there would be no way that Timothy could go with him into the synagogues. And so he had Timothy circumcised, and then they went together. Well, they left Lystra and then went through Syria and Cilicia. And then they wanted to go, and Paul wanted to go into Ephesus. His missionary method was you convert a big city and then expect them to take it to the outlying areas. But Spirit said, you can't go there. So they came to Assos and said, well, we'll go up north to Bithynia toward the Black Sea. Spirit said, no, you don't go there. And so they made a straight journey and went to Troas. Well, we soon learned why the Spirit was directing them to Troas. Because in the night, Paul saw a vision. A man of Macedonia was saying, come over into Macedonia and help us. But there must have been another reason God had in mind. Because for the first time in all of Luke's narrative, you have this expression. And when we saw this vision, we concluded that God had called us to go. And we went, set sail to go and went up to Philippi. So far as we know, this is the first time Paul met the writer of Acts, Luke, who later was to be a constant companion. Well, just relating, they went up to Philippi. Now, Philippi was in Europe, part of Greece, and it was a Roman colony, which meant to the best of their ability, they obeyed Roman rules, Roman habits and all. Well, as they went up there, passed by a river, and they saw that someone had been worshiping there, and the Jewish worship required a good bit of water for purification. And so on the Sabbath day, they came down and found a woman there, a seller of purple, apparently a very wealthy woman, because she had a place large enough that she could accommodate those four men and there'd be no talk about it. But this was Lydia. And then she and her household were converted and said, now if you have judged me worthy, stay with me. And he did, and they did. Paul then was going from Lydia's house into Antioch in Silas. And one thing that just irritated Paul to no end, as they went along, there was a maiden that had a devil in her that gave her the miraculous power of foreseeing the future. And her owners made a lot of money out of her. But she followed along behind them saying, these men are the servants of the Most High God. And finally, Paul knew probably that was going to cause trouble. But he said to the demon, depart from her. And the demon did, but she lost her miraculous power. Her owners lost their moneymaker. And so they were angry, and they told the magistrates of the city, said, these men come here, and they have done this. And the magistrates stripped them of their clothing and commanded them to be beaten with stripes, and then said to the jailer, put them in prison and be sure they are secure. And so the jailer put them into the inner prison, fastened them to the wall. And there they were with bleeding backs, fastened to the wall. But at midnight, they're not in there groaning and complaining and, oh, poor us. But they were singing hymns to God. And the other prisoners were listening. And then about midnight, there came a terrible, terrible earthquake, broke loose the bonds of every prisoner in that prison. Well, the jailer was awakened and came and saw the prisoners were unbonded and was about to fall on his sword and kill himself, because the Roman law was, you lose a prisoner, your life or his. But Paul said, do yourself no harm. We are all here. And that jailer came in and said, sirs, what must I do to be saved? Paul said, believe on the Lord, you and your household, and you'll be saved. Well, he took them into his house, washed their stripes, And then Paul preached to him and his household. And they immediately, the same hour of the night, went and were baptized. And then came back, and Paul and Silas returned to the jail. Well, the next day, the magistrates thought maybe they'd been a bit hasty at what they had done. And they said, sent word by the jailer now, tell those men they can leave. And when the jailer told them that, Paul said, by no means. Here they take Roman citizens, uncondemned, no trial, treat us this way, and then want us to sneak out of town. No way. You tell them to come and bring us out of town. And so they came to him and escorted him. He told them to go in peace, and all the people knew that there was no shame on what Paul and Silas had done. And the city magistrates were the ones with the problems. And so after they had greeted their brethren and exhorted them, they went on their way. Now you have another change in the language here, because Luke says, and they went through Lycaonia and Livonia and came to not Caesarea. Bereans were more noble than those at Thessalonica. And for 3 days, or three Sabbaths, stayed there and then went on from there. But Luke remained there in the city of Antioch, and it was years before Paul took him and they were together then the rest of their lives, because Paul left them there until he started his third journey to Jerusalem. And he had, in the meantime, had been at Corinth for 2 years, Ephesus at 3 years, had gone to Jerusalem and Antioch. And so all of that time intervened. But Paul left when there arose a great dissension there at Thessalonica. And he had been staying with Jason, and apparently they got word of trouble coming, so they sent Paul on the way. And here they assaulted the house of Jason looking for Paul. And there's big uproar. And Paul went on down to Berea. And there he found brethren that were more receptive. They received the word with all readiness of mind, searching the scriptures daily to see whether or not the things were so. Now, things went well for a while, but then here are these Jewish enemies came down to stir up the people there. Well, when the brethren saw that coming, they took Paul and took him over to the coast. But Paul gave word to Silas and Timothy to bring him word of how they were doing up in Thessalonica, and he would see them and come to them as quickly as they could. Well, he went over to Athens. And there at Athens, as he walked up the Broadway from the docks to the heart of the city, saw all of these idols to a god, to this god, that god, and then one to an unknown god. And then when he got up there, the Athenians were said to do nothing but to hear and tell some new thing. So they said, let's see what this babbler says. And then he preached unto them Christ, the Son of God, had raised from the dead. And then he said, there's a time God overlooked this ignorance, but now he commandeth all men everywhere to repent, because he's appointed a day of judgment in which he'll judge all men by the one whom he has ordained, wherein he's raised him from the dead. So Paul left Athens without much success, and then to Corinth. Corinth was a wicked city, and he preached, taught in the synagogue for a while, and Crispus, the ruler of the synagogue, obeyed the gospel, but they cast him out of there. And then he taught in the school or hall of Tyrannus, for another 18 months. And God told him, suddenly, don't worry. There's nothing going to harm you here because I have much people in this city. And so Paul stayed on there 18 months, taught them, and then left there, concluded his journey, or concluded that journey, and went to Jerusalem, and then later came back. And at that time, we'll take up a little more on Luke. But this is just sort of a quick summary of some of those things. But once we get to Luke, we'll take more time in each of these stops as we have time. But to see this great man of God. Incidentally, just in closing, some think that in his letters, you know, he wrote to Theophilus, that Theophilus was not the man's name, but rather a designation of him. Theophilus means lover of God. And this man was a Roman official, and to protect him, he called him a lover of God, Theophilus. Well, that may or may not be true, but to tell you a little story. When I came to Montgomery Bible School in 1943, I learned I had to become a member of one or two of the fraternities, either a Zetalithian, lover of truth, or a Philosophian, a lover of God. Well, someone got the idea that we talked about victory gardens and all of that. Why don't we use some of this land to have a victory garden? Well, how are we going to plow it? Said, well, we'll buy a mule. And so they put the challenge to these two clubs that whoever brings in the most will have a mule named after his club. So here we are about even, and we had a young man there, Billy Merle, whose dad was a preacher, but he couldn't afford to send Billy to college. And A.M. Burton in Nashville had done that. And we were about even coming toward the deadline. And Billy wrote to Brother Burton. He sent $50. They won. And the mule was named Phil. And we had Billy Griggs to plant our garden. But I think one year we had a row of corn. And soon old Phil, brief chapter in the history of the Faulkner University, is over. Okay, thank you for being here this morning, and we'll continue next time. Our subject will be the departure of Christ and the arrival of the Holy Spirit, dealing with Acts chapters 1 and 2. Thank you.